I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here at Guitarnerds, we're big fans of iZotope software and their impressive range of plugins. And you, dear listener, get 10% off all iZotope plugins at iZotope.com with discount code NERDS10. Every Guitar Nerds podcast for well over five of its 10 years has been edited, polished, and repaired using iZotope's wonderful range of tools. From their Nectar suite to EQ, compress, and lightly add reverb to give the impression that Matt and I are in the same room, to the RX repair suite to deal with pops, clicks, and background noise. In fact, every sound sample that you hear on our podcast is mastered using iZotope's Ozone Mastering Suite, and I can even compare audio, EQ, and levels to other similar released material using iZotope's Tonal Recall. It's all very good, and believe it or not, there are a bunch of free plugins that you can try. A vinyl simulator for added character, the Ozone Imager for help visualizing your stereo mix, and a vocal doubler for added richness and depth to your vocals. Pretty neat. Check it all out at iZotope.com.
Matt, I was doing some research earlier today, actually, and I discovered, did you know that the Mortal Kombat theme music is based off of a Scandinavian folk song?
Really?
Yeah, it's a Finnish hymn.
Joe, I'm sorry, but you are not going to have a career in stand-up. Yeah, it started off so strong with the kind of, classic dad joke, and you've sort of just gone down a very bizarre route.
What are you talking about? That was a great one. Go on.
We need more pedal-themed jokes for next time.
Okay, there we go. Dear listeners, send us in pedal-themed dad jokes for me to retell each week. That would be great. That's the new request. Hello and welcome, dear listener. Welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, dear listener. Obviously, straight off the bat, you can tell that my voice is absolutely shagged, but I popped a little post this morning up on the Guitar Nerds group, and you're all very helpful. I'm just saying, you know, my voice is gone. I need sort of quick fixes. Anyone got suggestions? And I had everything from like port to brandy to vocal zone to honey and lemon.
So you took them all at once.
Yeah, not quite. I actually ran around three pharmacies just trying to find vocal zone. I thought that was just an essential, like basic thing that you'd find, but no, apparently not. But I have found it. So I've got... I've got strepsils. I've got some honey and, well, not honey. I've got, I had to get the vegan alternative, the agave or whatever alternative.
Oh, yeah.
And lemon sweets. I've got those. We've got strepsils. We've got whiskey and we've got lemon and ginger tea. So,
right.
I think I'm going to be good. I think we're going to make it through.
Bloody lovely. Bloody lovely.
Indeed. But it's lovely to have you back, Matt, because of course you weren't here. 2 weeks. Yes, it has.
I was all ready for last week, Joe, and then you sort of booted.
Oh, I did. Oh, I forgot. I totally forgot. I actually told you not to do last week because I wanted to do it with JD. It was just we had so much to talk about because it was such a good guitar show. Dear listener, if you haven't listened to last week's episode on the Guitar Show UK 2023, do go back and listen. Not our most popular podcast. We dropped three places in the hobbies in the UK in the charts this week, and six places in the States.
So maybe it was having an American on somehow stunted our growth. Sorry,
it was you. It was you. You not being here.
They clearly need the sensible, sensible voice. Exactly. But yeah, I was gutted about the show. It sounded like a good one. New venue, new space. I'm actually I'm off to a Larvik Guitar Festival next week.
Where's that?
In Larvik, in Norway.
Oh, right. Yes.
Which hasn't happened since 2019, I think.
Have you been before?
Yeah, so we went before in 2019. When did lockdown happen? 2020, right?
2020.
Yeah, so we went in 2019. And it's really interesting. It's more of like a guitar festival in the sense that it's loads of players doing loads of workshops and masterclasses, but there is some musical brand elements to it. So we're going there to support a dealer in Norway, but also going to meet some guitar players. So the main people there, we're going with Alex Hutchins, but we're also Larry Basilo's there. So she'll be there playing her amazing purple Ibanez. I'm going to try and convince her to get Ibanez to give me one. Frank Gambale, Robin Ford, Pete Honore will be there. So I hang out with Danish Pete for a bit. And then they generally have some really good like local sort of famous Norwegian guitar players and stuff like that as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to go. It's bizarre how they managed to get so many big guitar players to essentially a tiny town in the south of Norway.
Right.
It's like not even near Oslo. It's like 3 or 4 hours drive from Oslo, I think. And the airport is a runway and a small building. And last time I flew, and I'm flying with Ryanair, and they only fly there 3 days a week, one flight a day. So it's like you can either go and then the next day you can come back.
Are the times good? Sometimes when you get those places, it's like all the flights are at like 3 a.m. or something.
No, actually, I think because the airport's only open like 9 to 5.
Does it double up as their local post office as well?
Yeah, it doubles up as their local post office. So I'll be at that. But there's so many guitar shows happening this year, so many events and things. We need to talk about Guitar Summit, Joe, at some point. We need to organize a trip to Summit.
Yeah,
I want to make sure I can go with you this year. I've had a few emails about it, so I'm looking forward to going to that.
It was a great show. My only problem with Guitar Summit was that it was a silent show, and I hate that with every fiber of my being. I know that normal shows are loud. I get that. That's a problem, but also like sometimes, yeah, there are situations where headphones are a better option, but not always, and it just ruins the whole vibe. It makes them very sterile. I found it a very sterile show, full of amazing guitars, but I would say, you know, boo to the organizers. They didn't understand. They've clearly missed the point of rock and roll.
How I should probably go and listen to the podcast. I'm going to ask you now. How was
it? That's fine.
In the quiet, noisy time at Birmingham.
It was well balanced. The Birmingham Guitar Show was well balanced. I think it was every, I don't know if it, I think it was, I think it was half an hour on, half hour off, something like that. I think that was the deal, which was great. It was perfect. So there was plenty of time to talk and have a conversation in the quiet part, and also plenty of time to really, you know, get to sit down and try something out properly in the loud time, which was nice. Great. I really loved it. I really loved the show. And I said this to you before we recorded, and me and JD spoke to you about it, dear listener, last week quite a lot. But we just thought it was reinvigorated, just so much energy. So it was like what guitar shows used to be. And since the pandemic and, you know, NAMM going the way it has, they felt like very muted half-done things. And this one was anything but. It was just exciting and fun. It helps when he had something like the Marshall reissue pedals, which had just happened. You know, they'd just landed, and we were all getting to see them and play them. You know, it sort of removed the need for YouTubers. But it was great that that massive launch had happened so close to a guitar show. Completely brilliant.
Amazing.
I mean, me and JD didn't speak about all the things we did. I know I'm sort of segueing slightly, Max. We've got loads of things to talk about your stuff. As we're on the guitar show, one of the things I didn't get around to talking about last week, which we will come to talk about in more detail over the next few weeks, is Baum guitars, because we got to pick up a Baum and take it back for Guitar Nerds for us to have a mess around. Wonderful, fantastic Danish brand Baum. I really felt like Baum guitars were there as kind of demo guitars. I mean, there was a display, but they were mostly demo guitars for all the pedal brands distributed by ADG.
Right.
By Bruce's company. And so there was a Baum for you to play on every brand's pedal board, because that's how they do their stand. It's brilliant. They've got all the different, like a big, massive pedal board with all the pedals by a single brand on one board, set of headphones, and a Baum guitar. And it was great, just really good. And I think everyone was really impressed with Baum, because what Baum guitars essentially do, they're that vintage come modern, you know, that sort of faux 50s. JD called it atomic era, which I thought was a great way to describe them. I've not heard that before. I'm aware that it is a popular, you know, popular term, but I had not heard it before. They're really gorgeous and kind of well priced as well. You're looking at somewhere between 1,500 and 1,800 quid for a model. We got their Conker 59 in a lovely burgundy mist metallic, which I was very excited
about. We talked about this before, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the weeks to come, but they make that crazy pink bass with the lightning bolt, right?
That's right, and one jazz bass pickup in the middle.
That's just so good.
A great range of basses, like normal basses as well.
Because I think because he's the one that plays with the Gorillaz, right? Or Gorillaz, is that right?
Yeah, so something like that. I don't know. I don't know.
Because I saw a video of, I think it was him, but whoever it was, but the bass player for Gorillaz at the EMAs, because they've obviously released a new album, it's gone to number one, whatever, and he's playing some sort of like crazy flying V bass, like Karina flying V bass, which looks dead cool. But that is that's awesome. So I look forward to talking a little bit more about those in the coming weeks and hearing about the guitar you've got.
The fact that this year I've been looking for that all-rounder, this Conker 59 is semi-hollow, a pair of like gold foil P90s. It's got two volume controls, which, as well as having a three-way toggle, which I really like, because you can shut down the neck pickup and then use the three-way selector as kind of an unlatched kill switch, or a latched kill switch, essentially. It's got a Bigsby on there, gorgeous rosewood neck, kind of a, I don't know if it's an almost baked, sort of, you know, and gloss back of the neck, matching headstock. This is, you know, firing on all cylinders. You'll hear it later, dear listener, when we do show and tell, but albeit we're show and telling a fuzz pedal, so you know, it could be any guitar, I guess, but
well, not necessarily, but you've played the demo to me already, Joe. It does sound very good, so stick around for that.
Indeed. But Matt, you have had quite a hectic couple of weeks off. You added the most amount of things to our little podcast list that I've ever seen.
I know. Lots of things. I've just been saving it up, Joe. I've had no one to talk to. I'm saving it up. We should start with the biggest tiny package that I got in the last couple of weeks, which we finally got the Silk Tone Micronaut, and
reminds the listener of what that is if they've forgotten.
So the Silk Tone Micronaut is a 4-watt mini amp head made by Silk Tone in California, single gain control, which is basically volume, a tone control, and then a two-way voicing selector. And in the shortest review ever, I would just say, buy one. I have been, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who's like, I just never get on with mini amps. They always sound really boxy and I'm not so sure. And they don't tend to be versatile and they tend to be a bit more like a one trick pony, I guess. And, you know, I remember the last kind of small lunchbox amp I tried was the RD, I think it's the RD1, which is the Rob Chapman mini amp head from Victory. Which has just got loads of gain. And I feel that, yeah, you can kind of, it's great. That's a great amp, but I feel you can mask a lot with loads of gain. Because you just, or you've got something like, I guess the Matamp Micro Mat, which you can find, the Mini Mat, I think it's called, which is like another 4-watt thing. But I tried one and it's okay, but just doesn't have much character to it.
Right. There's, of course, that old Epiphone 1-watt thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just loads of brands that have done a 5-watt amp, and they tend to be either cheap and very boxy sounding or kind of, you know, I don't know. They just don't have a lot of character to them. They feel like a bit of a cop-out, I guess, in some ways, especially some of the, you know, things like the Epiphone 1. It's like you could mod them and make them cool. But this is a boutique, well-designed, custom, hand-wound 4-watt amplifier. That is by far one of the coolest and best things that I've ever plugged my guitar into. Right. And I don't just say it because, you know, we've got it and we need to say something nice about it. I generally, it is now the second amp in pairing with my Morgan PR12. It's got just that amount of breakup and grit, but stays clean enough to be a great pedal platform. And it's just, you know, I don't really run a stereo amp, so like a stereo setup with like two amps are the same and things ping pong across two outputs. I like blending two different voices to get one sound. And this thing is just the perfect accompaniment to like anything. It is really, really good. So you've got
what are they, $999 in USD?
$999. I don't know if there's any available in the UK yet. I think Anderson's are a Silktone dealer. If you're listening to this, do go and find a dealer and go and ask them about it, because it really is a wonder. And there's a lot of other things that I really, really love about it, and I've been using a lot. And I think this might tickle your pickle, Joe, because I think what's super interesting about this is, yeah, I've been running it and just going straight guitar straight into it and through a few pedals. It takes pedals really well, which is obviously a really good plus. The first voicing is really clean, quite sparkly. It's got a nice amount of kind of like brightness to it without being too brittle. But 4 watts is more than loud enough for home use. And I think even small gigs, it's just that the power transformer, the custom power transformer really excels the amp. But I found that running the second voice, which is a bit grittier on a slightly lower volume, gives a bit of character to running two amps at once, because you've got a bit more grit and a bit more oomph. Right. And I'm running that into, at the moment, I'm running that into a more high-powered Celestion Redback speaker. So that allows, again, for a little bit more headroom and a little bit more option when you're kind of running it maybe for pedals. But I was running it cranked into a Celestion Creamback in an oversized 1x12, and it just had this like awesome huge vintage sound. I mean, the first thing I plugged into it was a baritone, and I thought, oh, you know, once you get past one or two on the volume control, it's just going to be fuzzed out, and that's cool. I like, you know, a cool fuzzy amp, but actually it's got way more headroom than you expect.
And it was some lovely edge of breakup tones as well, I thought.
Absolutely. It's, you know, you can put a boost in it and it just gets really warm, and it just doesn't sound brittle or just broken. You know, when you get low powered things and you really drive them and they just sound a bit broken, like they're collapsing in on themselves. So as an amp, I just think it's just a great thing to have like in the studio. And I'm sure, yeah, you could play small gigs with it, because the big difference with this, and I've not seen this on any other amp, is the power transformer has a custom tap on it, I guess you would they call it, that means that out of the line out, which has its own level control, you can then run that line out into a DAW or an interface. So this can be your basically a really nice Valve DI box for guitar or bass, which is wicked.
That's what I want. That is amazing.
So that is wicked. So, you know, I was doing like that into the Space Echo and then into the interface.
Oh.
And then obviously you could then put an amp modeler on it, because they're taking the tap out of the line out. You're basically just using the Valve preamp and power amp. You know, you can then run it into an app modeler or just into cab modeling. So that was wicked. But the other thing that you can do is you can take that line out feed. So there's a couple of cool things you do. The first one is taking the line out feed. So guitar goes into the amp, line out into your pedal board, and then taking your pedal board and putting that into another amp, but then also plugging the output, speaker output, into a cab as well. So you kind of actually run like that almost as a, it's almost like a fake wet dry setup kind of. So you can run two amps, but you can feed them both off the same input effectively. Or you can just go out of that into the input of another amp, and then you can use it like a pedal, effectively, like a just an amazing Valve boost at the front of your pedal chain. Or if you want more volume, I ran it into the effects loop return of another amp.
Right.
So that's all your preamp volume. The amp's all your preamp, and then you can then use the effects loop return for all your volume. So it's just a really cool Swiss Army knife of like different things you can do with an amp.
Versatility isn't the sort of thing you expect from this type of product.
No.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And I think, you know, it isn't cheap. Don't get me wrong. It's not like, I was like, everyone go and buy one. They're like, $299, well, what must buy or whatever.
I don't know, how much is a Focusrite ISA1? Because if you want to talk about, you know, like DIs, well, an ISA1 is $799.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I remember when we were talking year and a half ago, and I nearly bought one of those radial HDI interfaces, which is like a dual channel mega, you know, valve driven interface, whatever. And I bought that, you know, that 500 series Camden preamp, which is wicked. Yeah. And that's great for microphones, but this is just great for anything that you want to give a bit of valve warmth to. So just taking the line out tap from that straight into the front of an interface is just, it's wicked. And then, of course, what you can do, and I want to experiment with this a little bit, is take the line out, run that into the interface, and then run the speaker out into a cab, and then just mic up the cab. Because it's effectively a reactive load out of the line out, so you don't have to be plugged into a cab. Brilliant. Yeah, the line out works together with an isolated reactive load, so whether a speaker is plugged in or not, you still get the full power drive signal and response of the amp with all the EQ peaks and dips, no matter what you plug into. So another amp, pedal chain, a mixer, a DAW. It's just... It's so wicked.
It's for something wicked. That looks so retro as well, because it's a proper square, thick wooden box with like a big, you know, retro styled radio knob on it, dear listener. Yeah. So it looks like the sort of thing that's, you know, made in a shed and it's just going to be fuzzy.
Yeah. But and it's
actually very versatile.
It's just, I just really think if you were kind of looking for something that's a bit quirky, a bit different, you can use it at home. It's not going to break the bank in terms of some super boutique amps. But the winning combination, and I sort of hope that more people put it on amps, but I also don't, because I don't want Charles and the guys at Silktone to have other amps with the same feature. But the line out tap from the power amp is just a stroke of genius. It's actually really useful.
That's something everyone needs.
You know, running your guitar into that and then taking the line out into your pedal board and then running into your normal amp, it's just like having the best valve boost at the front of your pedal board. It's just it's great. It's absolutely wicked.
Well, this week I sent you a little backing track for you to write something to with it. So over the next couple of weeks... You know, I know. I would say next week. It's just I'm aware that you're away for business, basically now until we podcast.
I can't believe I'm out from after tonight. I'm out every night this week until next Monday. So, but that's
fine. Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll do some sound samples. We'll see. We'll play it by ear.
Yeah. So, it's going to be. I'm just looking forward to using it more, running synths through it. You know, reamping through it. A whole bunch of stuff. I think it's going to be wicked.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we carry on with the rest of your things, just to jazz it up a little bit, and as we're talking about demos, why don't we take a listen to this week's show and tell, and talk about that for a minute, and then we'll come back to your stuff after that. Also, before I do that, dear listener, I would just like to remind everyone. That's right, it's the Question Duck. And after we finish recording this episode, we're heading over to Patreon, where each week Matt and I answer a question from the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. And this week, I think we're going to maybe do a couple, maybe one. We're going to see how it goes. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. I think it's Moti Reba. Anyway, he's relatively new, and he asked this question. He said, "Greetings, friends. I'm a relative newbie listening to the podcast since late last year, rather than a stereotypical late middle-aged learner, and I have a newbie question. I bought a D'Angelico semi-hollow body right when the pandemic started. I've been playing it, but I'm not super thrilled with it, and I want to buy something else. I've got a big birthday coming up, and I feel like this is my chance to buy a nice guitar. On the other hand, I don't want to just throw money at it. The first instinct would be to buy a Strat, either a Player or American or whatever. Is this a situation where double the price is really double the guitar? And actually, I might be a Tele guy. I saw a beautiful new American one at the local shop for $1,300. Or maybe I go cheap and buy a Sire or a G&L. I don't play out, so it's not like I need a 2K plus guitar. I could buy a couple of instruments and amps for the price of one guitar if I went that route. On the other hand,
is the best chance to buy a good guitar. And also PRS, which seems to have high quality at lower prices, where it doesn't seem to be much of a quality difference between the $800 and the $1,600 model. Anyway, here's a bit of purchase paralysis. I've been visiting different stores, playing some of the different models, but nothing is singing to me yet, with the possible exception of a telly. Any sage advice people would ask? Wow, that was a long question for my
voice. That was a long question. I think, you know, well, firstly, greetings, well, and thanks for finding us and listening to us. The good news for them is we've been doing this for 10 years. So, you know, my simple answer would be, go back 10 years and just listen to every podcast. I'm sure you'll find the answer in there. I think it's an interesting one, really, isn't it? It's like, it is purchase paralysis. I think now more than ever, I don't know, maybe this is a rogue statement, Joe, but...
Matt, you know this is the question for the Patreon, right?
Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I thought you were trying to answer it. Yeah, we'll do this in the Patreon. We've got to do the topic of the week, which is Dave Lee's topic, but we'll get to that later.
I was just Joe, this is where I'm not being on the pod. This is what happens. You know?
I see.
This is why people listen.
I was just introducing it to let everyone know that that's what we're going to be talking about on the Patreon episode. Obviously, normally the questions are like a couple of lines, so this one is a bit longer. But yes, we'll get onto this in the Patreon. Meanwhile, let's listen to the thing that we're demoing this week. Now, this week, I've been spending a lot of time with the Hiwatt Custom Shop Filter Fuzz. It's the size of, you know, it's probably the size of that amplifier that Matt's bought. It's the biggest effects pedal I've ever seen. I mean, you know, it's great. Four controls. You've just got volume fuzz. Then you have a three toggled different bias selector, which essentially gives you three voicings on the fuzz. And then it's like a bass cut, I guess. So you add more bass in as you rotate it round. So you get like a big fat drivey fuzz, which makes it more sort of gated, modern, more Fuzz Factory-esque at full rotation. And back the other way, you're getting more like Maestro FZ1 sort of thing. So it does a lot of things. So what I've done is I recorded this little riff, and I've done four different sounds that I could make with it. One, I thought it does some great, like, transparent-ish overdrive, like low-gain drives. I really liked it for that. That was with the filter off and just using the fuzz controls. Great for, like, low-gain drive. The second one, I kind of made a more, I guess, slightly Proco Ratty distortion-style sound. And then the last two are very much a gated fuzz and then a super, very much a gated, splattery fuzz. But I loved it. I thought every single sound I created with it excelled at and did a great job. But here it is, and we'll talk about it after. So there you have it. That was the Hiwatt Custom Shop Filter Fuzz. Does a lot of fuzz things.
For something that is so simple, I thought it sounded great. I mean, you know, not to blow smoke here, Joe, but those demos, I think hearing demos like that in a mix, I get sold more on demos like that, because even though I'm not necessarily doing the same thing, I understand the effect a little bit more. Yeah, sure. I don't mind watching some of the longer reviews, and you know, I always love watching Mick and Dan on That Pedal Show, because I like the way that they demo, but so many demos are so similar. Pete Thorne always does like it in a mix, and you hear it and you hear lots of different sounds, and it just gives you a better idea of what the pedal can do.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I guess in some ways a bit of a sleeper, because you know, high watt, we don't really see a lot from high watt. You don't see them a lot.
Coming back,
sort of, they're coming back, but yeah, it's very cool. I get my only criticism, unless the picture on their website is wrong, is the fact that none of the controls are listed. They don't have any writing on them.
No, they don't.
Four controls. I'm like, I get they're trying to be cool, but that is bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to forget after you know what they are. You're not going to forget. Like, it's volume, gain, bias, bass cut. Like, there's not a lot to remember. But I started messing around with it, and I was like, especially the bass cut, I was like, no, I have no idea what this is doing. Like, it was, I was 100% sure. So I had to look it up. Like, I knew I could hear that it was doing something, but I was like, this doesn't sound like a regular sort of tone control, but I can't work out. Because, of course, as you add bass in, it's impacting the amount of gain so much.
Right.
So it sounds like almost a second gain. I was like, oh, maybe this is the gain control and that top one's not. And I was like, no, the top one is. So I definitely, had no idea without the names of the controls, but it's still cool.
So it's quite interactive in terms of what you put in terms of a filter or in terms of bass actually alters the sound of the fuzz as well. So it's quite an interactive.
Really? Yeah, depending on where you are on, especially I would say that control, that bass cut, where you are elsewhere on the pedal, it impacts the other controls hugely. I found to record it best, actually max the volume out on the pedal and then just put loads of minus decibels in on my interface.
Right, okay.
Run it straight in, because it just, all the other controls seem to just love having like the full volume of the pedal running into it.
Interesting.
But yes, it was very good. I really like it. I'm going to make some more things with it. I mean, we have about a billion pedals at the moment for me to get through and a huge backlog. But I think it's great, dear listener. If you don't care about pedalboard real estate, this is the fuzz for you. It's cool. It sounds great. And, you know.
Nice. I also, just as I was Googling high watt filter fuzz, I've also been served a reverb listing for a high watt Hi5, which is their 5 watt their 5 watt amp, pure valve amp as well, which is bass, treble volume gain, and then you've got two channels on that, and then bizarrely an auxiliary input on the front.
Well, Matthew, you didn't know this, but we have one turning up very soon, a custom sending us a red one of those, I think.
Nice. Yeah. I look forward to seeing it. I mean, you know, they could have gone, we know you like pink, so we'll make a pink one, but you know, beggars can't be choosers, I guess. That's cool. Yeah, I think look forward to seeing more from them. I miss it. Is one of the amps I truly miss is my high watt custom 20. Right. That thing is just super good. Super, super good. And I do miss that amp. Dreadfully. I wish I'd never sold it. I saw one in a secondhand shop in Ipswich. But it's one of those secondhand shops where the guy had probably spent too much time looking at sold prices on for sale prices on eBay and realized that no one's actually buying them for that money. Yeah. But it's put it up for about 500 quid more than
How much was it?
I think it was 15.95, and I think they're only about 17 or 1800 quid new, which is crazy because I think I paid 900 quid for mine. But
really,
you can't dwell on the past.
No, those wonderful prices of old.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see more from them. And yeah, that filter fuzz sounds wicked. I think, you know, it does sound distinctly different. I mean, it's got obviously got elements of a real 60s fuzz vibe, but that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was great. And yeah, again, it's absolutely huge. But if you want something with a bit of character, dear listener, it sounds excellent. Fuzz is obviously a well-trodden path. You've got a, you know, quadruple billion options out there by every single brand. And some of them are absolute. There are some absolutely amazing fuzz pedals. It's such a, you can never have too many. And for that reason, one of them should be one of these.
I think, you know, just as a side point, I'm sat between two pedal boards at the moment. You're talking about pedal board pedal sizes. So yeah. I'm looking at my big pedal board, which has got a CXM78, which is a pedal that's got flying faders. So it's massive. I've got a Dinosaural Cogmeister, which is three fuzzers in one box. Also massive. A Deluxe Memory Man. Huge. A Snarling Dog's Wah pedal, which has a pedal the size of a human foot. So I know all too well of big pedals. And you know what? They sound better. I've also, and to the right of me, I've got a pedal board with four Moog pedals on it. So, you know.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Just great. Don't really care about the size of pedals anymore. The bigger, the better, in my opinion.
Matt, I was going to buy one of those Behringer Octavers, their Mutron copy, the other day. Because they're, they're like 60 quid.
Did you now, actually find one for sale?
Yeah, they've got them. I think Andertons are doing them for like 60 quid. And I know that it's just digital. I know that it's nothing like the real thing inside. I know it's Behringer and Behringer are bad.
I don't think it is digital. I think they're, analog.
Really?
I'm, the dual phase, right? I mean, they're not even subtle anymore.
No, no, no. Like, is that what it is?
The big one that looks like the Mutron one with the blue front.
It's the Behringer Octave Divider.
Oh, that one. Oh, no, because they also do the Mutron Phaser. No, I reckon that'll be, it'll be analog.
Yeah.
I reckon it'll be analog. Yeah. I mean, this is the crazy thing about Behringer and don't really want to get into the argument on the podcast. I think we stay fairly neutral, but
yeah,
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I saw their post about, they're making a Moog ring modulator that looks unbelievably exactly like the Moog one. And you'll like this, Joe. And I was like, I bet Joe will buy one of these for Polymath. They've just announced the Toro, which is their clone of the Moog Taurus.
What?
So you can plug any standard MIDI or MIDI foot controller into that, but it's got a whole bunch of other features in it. And I was like, Joe should definitely buy one of those for Polymath.
I 100% will. So it's not released yet, but it's been sort of...
No, I think I can't really comment on it, I guess, but because no one really knows. But they announce these things and then they never seem to be like... And they do a video on their YouTube channel and then it just never seems... They never seem to like materialize anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy what people are... What some of these companies are coming out with. But yeah, I thought that's a bit of... That's a bit of you, I think, Joe.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. A little bit. John Paul Jones right there.
Yeah, I'll exactly. But yeah, actually, they've been doing it longer than we think, but I think it'll be all right. I mean, like you say, for 60 quid. Someone said to me the other day, they were like, with $100 on Amazon, you can have a whole lot of fun as a guitar player because there's just so many ridiculous bits of kit that you can buy that are like cheap knockoffs for like no money. So you know, not exactly the most ethical practice in the world, but it'll probably break. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not exactly going to be like the most sturdy of things to
probably not to, this is, do you know the reason I stopped in the end, I was like, will this replace my Boss OC2 on my board?
Absolutely not.
And it absolutely won't. So I was like, why am I buying this? I have a Boss OC2. There's nothing that's ever been made since that's better.
It's so a very sensible thought, Joe. A very sensible thought.
Exactly. Anyway, let's get back to talking about the other new things that you've got and things that you're looking at the moment.
Yeah. So the other thing that turned up in the post, I'll reach over and get it. So JHS announced three more pedals in their Legends of Fuzz series. Let me see if I can find which ones they were so I don't forget. So these are kind of, because they had the Legend 66 series or whatever it was, which were the hand-built ones by Josh in his basement. These ones are the kind of block of cheese wedge ones. So they had the Bender, the Crimson, and the Smiley. Yeah. And they've now got, oh, and the Supreme. And they've the Supreme, now got the Plug-In, the Berkeley, and the Mary Kay. I think it's cool. I like the idea. I like the fact that, you know, there was a video that he did recently with Rob Scallon where he's like, he's got like 4,000 guitar pedals and a whole lot of different fuzz pedals. And I like the fact that it's like Plug-In. It's like 1967 California, like basically where they started. And they sort of appeal to me. But the thing that caught my eye was actually their other pedal. And it's not really a pedal at all. It's kind of, I don't even know what they list it as under the website, utility. This is the Vulture. And it is effectively, in some ways, nothing new. It's a power amp. You plug a power in from your Voodoo Labs or whatever. You then go power
Voodoo
out.
Labs? Well, we 1999.
Chops.
Who uses Voodoo Labs?
Oh, I've got, you know, strong place in my heart for Voodoo Labs. Had a Voodoo Labs Mondo for so long on my pedal train board.
It was a 4x4 for me.
Oh, 4x4. The Mondo was the only one that had the most power outputs on it. Yeah. But you take an output from a power brick or even a PSA, and then you use another power lead to go out of the Vulture into your guitar pedal. And effectively, it's a voltage sag. So it takes whatever's going into it at 9 volts. It doesn't take anything else. And sags it all the way down to nothing. And that's, in some ways, nothing new. And it's on pedals already. Bias control is effectively a voltage control. But what makes this very cool, very unique, and great for a pedal board is that you can turn the sag on and off. And I think that is very, very cool, because
it's giving you two different sounds to a, you know, especially when it comes to fuzz pedals, two options straight on your pedal board right there.
Exactly. So, and, you know, obviously no audio passes through it, but if you've got a fuzz pedal that you like, or lots of different distortion pedals you like, you can just plug this in and experiment and see what works. Like, it could be a great studio tool for just experimenting, but also just a great tool to have on your pedal board. And like you say, you get two sounds out of one pedal.
Yeah.
You know, really starve the voltage, get something a bit spitty and a bit splattery, and then turn it off, and then you've got your full fuzz sound.
I think it's great. It's great. You're adding, like, it's like getting an extra built-in function on your favorite fuzz.
Mm, absolutely. So I think, you know, I think they're £88 in the UK.
Right.
I just think it's a cool thing to have your pedal board. It's a great utility thing to sort of pull out the trick bag if you want to do something different. Only arrived yesterday. I haven't had much chance to plug it in. So I'm going to just try it with a bunch of fuzz pedals. No use trying it with something like the Bliss Factory, like Fuzz Factory type thing, because it's already got that gain control on it. So I'm thinking like DS1, SD1, you know, something like, what else have I got kicking around? I've got the secret machine from, I can't even remember, Dandrive, the Pelator, loads of fuzz pedals that you can try it with. Basically anything analog that's a drive pedal. Don't try it with a digital delay pedal, because you'll probably just break your pedal rather than make it sound any better. Or it won't even turn on. But I'm looking forward to trying that. It's a very cool idea, something a little bit different. So it's going to be quite cool, I think.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. I think it's a super cool utility thing for not a lot of money. So fuzz fans, really. I know it's going to work on everything else, but it's for fuzz fans.
Yeah, I think it's for anyone that, it's got a fuzz pedal and wants to mess around without actually modifying their pedal. Do you know what I mean? It's like a lot of people would say, oh, yeah, I've added this and a bias control. And, yeah, effectively what you're doing is starving the pedal of power. You know, and a lot of people go, well, you could do it with the battery. And it's like, well, yeah, you've got to get the battery to that point, and then the battery's going to run out anyway. So, you know, I guess it's a case of, you know, yeah, doing finding where it works and then putting it on a pedal board and creating an option. And I've actually, maybe we'll talk about it a bit more next week when I've tried it, but I've also got coming a Mythos Argonaut, which is a octave up, but it's kind of like the bit like the Bigfoot Engineering Octopus, although that one's passive. So it's an octave up that you put before a fuzz pedal to give you that kind of ripping octave up sound. And I'm like, well, do you go for octave up sound, or do you go for starved, probably octave down sound? But you can imagine having both of those in one fuzz pedal.
That's really like, cool.
That's super cool. It got me thinking
sort of
about
dying Octavia sort of thing.
Yeah, it'd be really cool. This is an idea for anyone out there who makes pedals who wants to make it. It would be really cool to make a fuzz circuit like a fuzz face with three buttons, and one button is the octave up, and then the other one is a voltage sag that you could turn on and off.
Yeah, very cool.
That'd be into that.
You're giving these ideas away for free, Matt.
Oh, well, not free, because you're going to have to make me one. but close enough to free, I guess. Close enough.
I see. All right. Well, talk to me about ring mods anyway.
Yeah, well, this is just a kind of... So we're talking about Moog pedals. And the one Moog pedal I wanted for ages was the low-pass filter. Because it's wicked. It's just a great fit. It's the classic Moog ladder filter. And I really wanted that sort of like funky, sort of auto-wire, like snappy filter sound on my pedal board.
Right.
And I was playing around with it, but it's so, because it's analog, it's super sensitive. Every guitar reacts differently because depending on the input signal, you have to kind of manipulate the controls in real time to balance it. But it just sounds so... like super like sweet sounding. And I was like, oh, maybe I can get the same sound from the H9. So I was sort of like playing around, just A-B-ing it. And I was like, oh man, I finally dialed this Moog pedal in like absolutely perfectly. Then realized I was playing the H9. So I was like, okay, well, it doesn't make the low pass filter redundant, but I was like, do you know what? I'm going to put the ring modulator back on. So I've got a Moog ring modulator. And the great thing about this compared to any other ring modulator, I thought the Electro-Harmonix ring thing would do it. And I remember talking to Dan when we did the Boss thing at Kato Studios for Guitar Nerds before I even worked for Roland, if you remember that.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, it does a bunch of other stuff. But I bought one and I could never get it to sound the same. So I was like, I remember having the Moog one. I was like, it's definitely the best one. And compared to any other ring modulator, you can then set the frequency rate so low that it turns into a tremolo. But like a really warm, you know, really big warm tremolo.
That's very cool.
And then I realized if you turn the frequency all the way up, so it's super high pitched, and turn the LFO up, it sounds just like Haunt of Roulette Tez from Delaus in the Comatorium, because that is the ring modulator that Omar Rodriguez used on the record. And once you plug an expression pedal in, you can control that and manipulate that sound in real time. So you can go between a tremolo and a high pitched ring sound. The annoying thing was I then had to try and put an expression pedal on my pedal board, which I was only using for that, and it was getting annoying. And
that's a lot of real estate.
It is a lot of real estate and set, but it does sound very good. And then I was like, you know what? And I always come back to it, and I love it so much, and I've nearly sold it about three times because I was like, oh, I'm never using it. And then I come back to it, and I always realize it's the best. And that's the Snarling Dogs Mold Spore Psycho Schematic Wah, which is effectively a three voiced wah. So you've got Voodoo. What's the other one called? White Room, which is like a Clapton-y type thing. Voodoo, which is a Hendrix type thing. And then Shaft, which is just like a super, super funky wah. And the wah sound is great, and it's quite tweakable. You can change the volume. But the ring modulator on it, it's a wah with a ring modulator. Who thought of the idea? No idea. But
it's a great idea.
It's a wah with a ring modulator in, which has got a wet dry control on it. And there's a button on the side that means that the foot pedal then controls the ring modulator sweep. And it just sounds wicked. And I was just like, you know what? And I think it's probably because I listened to Jeff Beck so much over the last couple of months. And there's a track on, not on Truth. Is it Truth? Is Truth the one where he's playing the Strat, or is it Wired the one that's playing? He's playing the Strat on the front.
Truth's still Les Paul's.
Yeah.
Blow is still Les Paul. So yeah, I guess Truth is Strat.
And then there's a track where he's playing a solo on a ring modulator, and I'm just like, it sounds so good. It just sounds so good. It's just such a cool effect.
Right.
And there's just not many out there that do it really well. I mean, the Moog one is kind of unobtainium. They're stupid money now.
Right.
This
Snarling Dog's mold spore is £350 on
eBay. I mean, well, not what I paid for it. They never, ever come up for sale. They're super, super rare. I actually bought mine from Ace from Skunk Nancy back when I was at BIM. Did I buy that? No, I didn't buy it. I nearly bought one from him. I borrowed it off him. And then I found one on eBay going for the right price about 10 years ago. And it's wicked. The whole range of pedals is really good. They actually do one called the Erroneous Moan. Right. And it's a reverse tape echo simulator. So it's a tape delay, but the foot control controls the reverse element of it.
Right.
And then when you haven't got it turned on, it's a volume pedal, which is quite
great.
Cool.
Oh, that's great.
And I've never ever seen one for sale.
Oh.
Ever. I don't think they were particularly successful. I mean, it weighs a ton. I mean, it's literally like a Cluedo murder weapon. It's like, you know, Matt with the mold spore in the studio. But it's wicked. And it just made me realize that I needed to tell everyone on the podcast that if you haven't got a ring modulator on your pedal board, you should probably go and buy one.
I mean, I use ring mod for bass all the time. It's a fair amount on the last Polymath record. I use the one on the Boss MS3.
Yes.
It's really good.
Well, the good thing about the one on the MS3, if I remember rightly, is you can obviously all ring modulators, you can tune in to the pitch of your note.
Yeah.
But hasn't the MS3, or am I getting confused with GT1000, hasn't it got an intelligent ring modulator on it? So no matter what note you play, the ring modulator is tuned to that note?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've never changed it from its default settings because I tried it out once, I wonder if what this sounds like, just turn it on or whatever the default out the box settings are. And I was like, yeah, this is it. This is the best sound. And I've never changed it since. So I'm afraid to touch any other controls in case I lose the magic. And I've bought other ring mods and, you know, tried other things since and never been as happy. So I just, factory settings ring mod on the Boss MS3.
I think if I'd recommend anyone to go and buy any ring modulator, which I think is dead cool, I would go and buy the DOD Gonculator because it's a distortion pedal and a ring modulator.
Man, that is cool.
And I and many of my friends only want one because Mike Einsinger from Incubus used one on a bunch of tracks from Make Yourself, and it sounds, and Science, and it just sounds so good. It sounds so good. And with DOD coming back, who knows? Yeah. We might see some.
All their stuff was at the guitar show, and it's all great prices.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, I'd spent too much money on other effects pedals by this point, but I was going to buy a Meatbox and one of the preamp. But I could buy that anytime. They're a big brand. I wanted to buy all the weird stuff.
Yeah, I tell you, the one the one pedal I slept on, I guess, as it were, in terms of buying. And I definitely should have at the time, because they are just stupid money now, was the DOD Buzz Box.
Right.
Yeah, I've put Buzzsaw. It's not Buzzsaw, is it? It's Buzz Box. So the DOD Buzz Box was made to emulate the sound of Buzz Osborne from the Melvins. Wasn't signed off by him or agreed by him, I think, in any way, but it's a Proco Rat driving an MXR Blue Box.
Great. That's great.
It sounds ridiculous. It's so distorted and so subby. it's almost unusable. Yeah. And I remember we had one in the window of GAC, which I bought in, and I think we had it up for 39 quid. And there's one on Reverb right now for £372. It's just like, it's like one of those things. I can just remember it now going, ah, I don't need that. And then just plug it in going, no, I should have bought that.
It's but, gone mad.
Oh, well. I think mad. Even at the time, like, people weren't buying it and going, I mean, I know, I guess this kind of leads on to something we were going to talk about, Joan. I don't know how much time we've got. Not much.
Well,
we've
still got to do topic, so a little bit longer.
But, yeah, maybe next week we should talk about the insane prices on Boss pedals, because
yeah,
my friend had a PW2 power driver, which was, I think, the worst selling pedal of our entire history. You could buy them for next to nothing. They weren't rare. They were just uncommon, I guess.
Right.
And I think I saw one go for like 200 quid the other day, and I'm like,
my goodness.
No. But we should definitely talk about that.
I definitely want to talk about some Boss stuff next week, just because I've been getting really into it. I've been doing a little bit of research on the history of fuzz. And of course, Boss were relatively late to the game on that, just because, you know, Boss started making pedals in 77 and fuzz wasn't popular in the 80s. So, you know, but I've got really into what, you know, Boss did with fuzz afterwards in 90s. So I want to talk about that next week. And we want to talk about the fact that I put up that thing about what everyone's top three Boss pedals were. I thought that was really interesting. I've collated all those answers into a little document.
Oh,
so
nice.
I thought it would be interesting to talk about that and sort of what, you know, what our guitar nerds audience think of as their favorite Boss pedals. That would be great. But we do still need to talk about the topic of the week. It's been hanging over for a few weeks. And apologies, yes, it was pointed out to me last week. I did say at the start of the podcast, but I guess, you know, if you missed it, you didn't see. But last week, we weren't going to do one because it was a Guitar Show special. We didn't do one the week before because Dave Lee hadn't had the time to get back to me, but he did the next week. So let's talk about Dave Lee's topic of the week. First of all, though, I guess we really need to spin the wheel in order to find out who's going to have the next topic of the week. So let me do that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the winner this week, and to decide the topic of the week for next week's episode, I promise we'll start doing it a little bit earlier in the podcast, is Yogi, the guitarist. Yogi. I only
What's
saw
your
him at the Guitar Show.
I've got a million.
It's going to be a question about stairs or something, isn't it? But yes, that's fine. So I'll reach out to Yogi and we'll get his topic of the week. Now, remember, dear listeners, some of you have, like Dave, asked very specific questions. But of course, you can make this a topic for us to discuss in detail across the whole podcast rather than just answering a question. It can be like, it can be a broad thing for us to talk around more. But it's entirely up to you. We'll also answer, you know, a specific question, as this one came in from Dave Lee. He said, due to unreliable band members, etc., I've recently decided that jamming with an old friend, just doing some old school punk stuff, him on drums and vocals and me on guitar and bass, as is less hassle. I've been playing with the idea of either using a Variax, JTV, and my Helix,
to add an octave down to the lowest one or two strings, and playing power chords or playing bass with an octave up. Either way, I have been running each to a separate out, one to a guitar amp and the other side a bass amp. What kind of Helix settings or pedal board setup would you go for to make an approximation of covering both? Are there any amp modes or effects that you would suggest to make it sound its fullest? Now, obviously, Matt, I'm going to be able to talk around the Helix a bit more than you, as I've got one and had, you know, several of the iterations. But I also kind of wanted to talk about other options that Dave has here, because you don't necessarily need, I know he's thinking that he needs that Variax because you can assign strings and stuff. So he could, that's a really great way of getting around it. Certainly, I think there's more advantage in playing guitar and adding the low end than there is in playing bass and adding the high end. I know Royal Blood do that, but they only have one. They can only do one thing. It's limiting. So it's better the other way around. But you don't need that Variax to achieve that. Let's not forget that pedals like the as long ago as the Boss OC3 and the OC5 both have a direct out alongside their standard out on the octave pedal. So you can run a direct out into the bass amp, for example, and run your clean out just into your guitar amp, and then it won't be affected on the guitar amplifier, but on your bass amplifier, you can get just that octave down, which is really good. And also, I realized then you're going to be like, well, that's not going to work when I'm playing chords. There's a range control. I think there's a range control on the OC3. There's definitely one on the OC5 where you can turn it the whole way down so it only affects the lowest note on your chord. So it essentially emulates exactly what we're talking about with Helix. So, you know, obviously if you're playing Helix and you have a Helix setup and you have the Variax already, fine, that might be the easiest route, but you can do what you're asking with a simple, very affordable, I'm sure it's on the OC3, so you can do it with the OC3.
Yeah, because I was thinking Helix doesn't sound very old school punk, does it? Like, yeah, we're going for some old school punk. This one's called, and then plugging a guitar into a Variax into a Helix. But I get the convenience side of it. I agree with you. I think the way to go would be more Jack White than Royal Blood.
Yeah.
I think that the bass into the guitar amps has a certain sound, but I love the aggressive nature of the kind of Jack White Stripes kind of garagey type thing. And I was actually going to suggest the triple graph.
Oh, yeah.
Which is octave up, octave down, kill switch, and then you've got the auxiliary loop. And then, yeah, pairing that with a kind of cool fuzz pedal. I think that might be quite cool. Because then you've got, yeah, independent latching or moment two controls of each octave. And I kind of like the idea of, yeah, taking a kind of, you could take like a Les Paul Junior, you know, run into a cool fuzz pedal, and then you've got octave up, octave down.
Yeah.
And, you could have the auxiliary could do something wacky. You know, you could have like a really glitchy delay in there or something like that, which would be quite cool. I think that's a nice way to do it. A little bit more definitely. Analog,
yeah. As it were. Well, speaking of analog, yeah, in fact, my favorite way to achieve this doesn't actually even require the second amplifier, because it's so unbelievably punishing a pedal. But the KMA Machines Meyer, I have no idea how to say that, dear listener. it is an octave pedal it's got two octaves down, a clean blend, and an octave up. The octave up is a fuzz octave up, and the two octaves down, one and two, are clean. You've also got a rotary to blend in your clean channel, and you can control each of these things individually on the 3 foot switches. Also, you can assign, there's an effects loop that applies to your clean signal, which means you can keep the two octaves down clean, but add another pedal in to affect your clean signal, which is great. So you could have like a nice thick drive on your clean signal, and then you've got fuzz on the octave up, but then your octave down one and down two still stay clean so that they actually track properly, because they're, you know, they're analog. Mm-hmm. And just for
ridiculous walls of sound. It's very, very good.
Or totally random and rogue suggestion. You could go for something like the submarine pickup, which is that little pickup that goes just under the low strings. And it's physically a pickup that just goes in the low strings that basically allows you to isolate a set of strings and then drop them down an octave or, you know, run them through a separate set of pedals. So
yeah,
quite a few ways to achieve that. But yeah, I some really good suggestions there to doing something a bit different than the Helix and the JTV anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, you know, if you're absolutely, these were just what I view as simpler, more organic solutions, especially if it's going to be punk, you know, less digital solutions. But if you are going for the Helix, Dave, if that's your baked in setup, then I don't think it needs to be too complicated. I think for punk stuff, the classic SVT preset on the Line 6 is going to sound great. It's going to do all your drive stuff really, really, all your bass stuff really well. I really like using the Klon Centaur model on the Helix for bass, but blending it in, so just run a second line to the bass amp as well, so you can keep your low end and your fundamentals there a little bit better. That's really nice for just a drivey bass sound. But yeah, definitely love the idea of, I love this idea of, you know, get a guitar amp with a line selector at some point sending out to a bass amp. There are so many ways to make great sounds doing that. But yeah, even if you want to use the Helix, a Boss OC3, I don't know what they go for pre-owned, probably not a lot.
I can't. Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, to me, I think the OC5, the fact that you've got that lowest note tracker.
Does the OC3 not have that?
The OC3 has.
Over here. I'm going to check.
The OC3 has. Because I'm going to have to look at it now. No, so you've got you've got the range control, but OC5 specifically has the setting that says lowest, and it'll always detect the lowest note. So even if you play high up the fretboard on the upper strings, if you're playing some chords, it will detect the lowest note rather than the lowest string.
So on the OC3 does have the range control and a minimum and max control for that. But I guess it wouldn't be as clear, clinical, accurate as the 5.
No, so the range control effectively works a bit like, I guess it tracks like frequency.
Right.
So if you set the range control on OC3 to minimum, it will only track the E string, the low E string, and it will leave everything else. But obviously, if you then play anything not on the low E string, you won't get any sub-octave. Whereas on the OC5, if you set it to lowest, the lowest frequency it detects, it will push down an octave. So now where you play on the fretboard, you'll always have that lower octave.
I see. I think that's probably a way of just about getting away with it with the OC3 nonetheless. But, I'm going to look it up now. What does an OC3 go for? No one even likes them.
£83.
I see. That's. I mean, I'm sure that's what they were new when they came out.
Yeah, they've probably not changed.
Fine. All right. Whatever. Yeah, I'm looking at one for £90. They're almost vintage now. The OC3. God damn it.
I know, it's mental, isn't it? It's absolutely, I can't believe it. Mental.
Oh well. Okay.
But there we Fine. Go.
Well, there it is. Anyway, that is. I hope we've helped Dave on your journey a little bit. I know we didn't answer that much of it in terms of, you know, application to Helix, but I think you've got some good suggestions there, and I wish you luck. It's an awful lot of fun to be the only guitarist in a band. But yes, that is all the time we've got on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds. If you'd like to get in touch with us to ask a question, or for any reason at all, if you've got a company you think we should be checking out, we are always up for suggestions. Then email us info@guitarnerds.net, DM us on Instagram, ask us in the open forum on our Facebook group, Guitar Nerds Group. If you're a Patreon supporter, then contact us through Patreon. We're heading over to Patreon now to record this week's Patreon exclusive episode. Join us there.
For as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. Head over there for all the info on how to sign up. And we'll be back next week with all this nerdery. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Another podcast episode under our belt. It's time to say thank you to all our wonderful, incredible, top-tier Patreon supporters, without whom none of this would be possible. Thank you to Scott Guitars, Suresh, Dosonic Pickups, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Joran Brown, John Conaway, The Studio Rats, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Mark Hizal Kadawaki, Stuart Watson, Eric File, Peter Peche, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Joe Puttick, Blake Weiland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordwick, Scott O'Brien, and Moog Gravit.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.